Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Brought to you by BAE Systems. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening to On DOD this week. Glad you're with us once again. I'm Jared Serbu. Our topic for the hour is a relatively new concept for the U.S. Army, teaching soldiers, their families, and Army civilians how to be resilient in the face of adversity. The Army, as we know, is extremely good at training young people for combat and in technical skills, but it is new to the game of teaching life skills through what it calls the Comprehensive Soldier and Family Fitness Program. That program, as you'll hear this hour, focuses on what the Army says are five dimensions of strength: social, emotional, family, spiritual, and physical. And while the program's leaders freely admit that they're still in the process of convincing some people in the Army that this is not New Age mumbo-jumbo, they say every element of the program is based on sound science and it's already producing results, reducing potentially destructive behavior patterns among soldiers. Colonel Kenneth Riddle is the director of the Comprehensive Soldier and Family Fitness Program. He laid it out for us in an interview at his office in Arlington, Virginia.
So 4 years ago, under General Casey, the Chief of Staff of the Army at the time, after 10 years of war, the leadership was looking for a curriculum, a training program that would help individuals cope with adversity, cope with challenging times, equipping them with resilient skills that would better enable them to handle rough times. And we were seeing a lot of effects from 10 years of war, fatigue, anxiety, depression, lots of results. So really, that was the purpose of standing up the program 4 years, was to equip individuals with these coping skills to better help them better able to handle the adversity and the challenging environment we've been in. And then what we found over the last 4 years in executing this program, that this program is extremely valuable in the household, at home, in garrison, in our daily lives, not necessarily while at war or just coming home from war. These skills, which include relationship skills and communication skills and critical thinking skills and optimism skills, help individuals in everyday life in performing their duties at work and at home with the family. And I would venture to say the program is probably more important today than it was 4 years ago, given what we've been through as a military, given the stressful environment, given the 10-plus years of war, and helping us in a garrison environment as we face the challenges at home. And so that's kind of the then and the now, and there's clearly some overlap and benefit.
Is this a new concept for the Army? And I guess what I'm trying to get at is how much of a culture change is it for the institution to think about training these really life skills to soldiers and families?
I think it is really different for the Army. It is not something we're used to training. It is outside the box. I mean, let's face it, what we do really well is train soldiers to fight and win the nation's wars. And when we talk about training resilience skills and enhanced performance skills and equipping them with coping skills and life skills, that is a bit different. And so we are talking about changing a culture, and that takes time to change a culture. We're also talking about changing, equipping a generation with some skills that may not have been prevalent when they were growing up. Riddle's take on this is the 18 to 24-year-old demographic grew up and is growing up behind an iPad, an iPod, a DS, a Wii, an Xbox, an Apple this, an Apple that. That generation is a little bit less social, more isolated, a little more withdrawn because they didn't grow up the same way that you and I did. And so these life skills that we're training, I think, really help fill a void, fill a gap, and equip them with skills that some of them may be missing right now. So it's different for our Army.
Sure. But before we get too much further down the road here, we should probably define what exactly we mean when we say resilience. What is the Army's definition of resilience?
So in a nutshell, what we're doing is, and I'm going to explain resilience and then explain enhanced performance, because both of those sets of skills fall underneath the Comprehensive Soldier and Family Fitness Program.
Right.
So what we mean by resilience skills is equipping, in a nutshell, equipping individuals with skills that better enable them to cope with adversity and then bounce back after an adverse event. In short, that's what we're trying to achieve. And then we know that's tied to performance. And so we train some enhanced performance skills also under this program that, again, equipping individuals with performance skills that enable them to do their best when it matters most. Skills that they're not going to get through their normal training. That's why we call them enhanced skills, because it's not something that soldiers are necessarily familiar with.
And when we say adverse event, are you thinking of any set of events in particular on the battlefield, off the battlefield?
Both. All of the above. Events at home, events in everyday life. It could be a vehicle accident. It could be struggles in the family. It could be in a combat environment. So all of the above. What these skills do during one of these events is help the individual view and cope with the event more as an adverse event versus a traumatic event.
Hmm. Yeah, separate those for me, because I think that's an important distinction, an adverse event versus a traumatic event.
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. Two individuals in a car accident. And both cars turn upside down, both drivers injured, minor injuries. In the first vehicle accident, and this really happened, in the first vehicle accident, the driver crawled out from underneath the upside-down vehicle, brushed themselves off, and caught a ride to work. And that was kind of the end of it. For that individual, that accident was an adverse event. The other individual who had a very similar accident, same injuries, car turned upside down, had nightmares about the event. Couldn't drive down the same road anymore after the event. Couldn't drive the same car after it was repaired. Actually, eventually had to seek help, counseling, from the event. For her, the event was traumatic. So you ask yourselves, two very similar incidents, why is one handled as an adverse event and one seen and handled as a traumatic event? Science tells us it's level of resilience. Level of resilience determines how you cope with, how you recover from such an event.
That's a really great illustration. So let's talk a little bit about how the program actually works, how you instill resilience. So take it where you will. I mean, what are you doing to provide this training to soldiers?
Yeah. So it's a train-the-trainer program.
Yeah.
What we do is we take non-commissioned officers, primarily Sergeant E5 up through Sergeant First Class E7, because they are the population that touch soldiers every day. Mm-hmm. And we take these individuals and send them to 10 days of training to become a master trainer, master resilience trainer, MRT is what we call them. And then once they're certified after 10 days of training, they go back to their unit and they impart those skills upon their soldiers, family members, and in some cases DA civilians, if they have DA civilians that work for them. And so it's a train-the-trainer program. So to date, we've trained over 18,000 master resilience trainers in the Army. Now, that's since inception of the program. Not all of them are still in the Army training soldiers. About half of them are still in the Army training soldiers. So that's how the program works, is we train the trainer, and then they turn around and train the soldiers. And the requirement is every soldier in the Army must get, right now we're teaching 12 skills in the 10-day course, must train all their soldiers in a formal fashion on all 12 skills once a year. That's the requirement. But probably more important than the formal training piece is the informal training piece. That's where, after you've learned these skills in a classroom environment, you start to practice these skills in your everyday life. The skills come with their own language. We call it the resilience language. And it's hard to understand until you go through the training. But what we want soldiers to do, and many units are already doing it, is they start talking the language in their everyday life, in their everyday training, in their everyday duties. So they're talking the skills, practicing the skills, operationalizing the skills on the rifle range, in the physical training formation, at the family readiness group meeting, in the motor pool while doing maintenance. They're living the skills. And that informal piece, when you integrate, inculcate the skills in everything you do, then we're achieving the senior leader's vision, which is to change our culture and have a culture of resilience in the Army. So you got a formal piece, and you got an informal piece. That was the resilience piece. And real quickly, I'd like to talk about how the performance piece is a little bit different from that.
Please, yeah.
So for the most part, Master Resilience Trainers are not certified or qualified to train all the enhanced performance skills. We hire different individuals for that. We hire individuals with master's and PhDs in sports-related psychology fields. Certify them to train these enhanced performance skills, and then we put those trainers down on the installations, and they exist at 16 installations right now. Those are the individuals that are training the enhanced performance skills. So two sets of skills trained a little bit differently by different groups.
Sure. Let me follow up on the informal training piece. I know you said it's hard to describe that language unless you've been through it, but can you sort of try? I mean, can you give me an example of how you practice these skills in an informal setting?
Absolutely. A couple examples, a couple different skills. Performance skills. One of the performance skills is called energy management, and a component of that, it has tactical breathing as part of the training, teaching soldiers how to manage their energy level, conserve their energy level, lower their heartbeat, and breathe tactically. So if I'm on a rifle range, I'm a squad leader getting ready to take my squad onto the firing line to qualify on the rifle range, I'm probably going to be covering the energy management and tactical breathing portion of the enhanced performance training. That's an example of how you operationalize the skill, put it to good use in everyday application. Another skill we teach on the resilience side is called thinking optimistically. And we have a skill called hunt the good stuff, where you deliberately think of the good things in life, the good things that happened to you recently, let's say the last 24 hours, and you articulate why those things were good and what they meant to you. And the science has proven that if you do this over time, hunt the good stuff, it will improve your sleep habits. It will improve your outlook on life. It will improve your attitude, and really just make you a better person, a happier person, and a happier family. And so, there are some units that have adopted hunt the good stuff as part of their daily routine. There's one platoon at Fort Bragg that their motto is now hunt the good stuff. So when the platoon sergeant calls the platoon to attention, their response back is, hunt the good stuff. And then they solicit from the soldiers in formation what their hunt the good stuff was for that day. So the soldier talks about what the good things that happened to them in the last 24 hours. Again, forcing them to use the skill, operationalizing the skill, because it's real easy to think about the negative. You and I think about the negative every day. It's easy. It comes natural to us. It causes us not to sleep at night. So if we can force a skill that helps us think about the good stuff and improve our optimism, that's what we do.
Colonel Kenneth Riddle is the director of the Army's Comprehensive Soldier and Family Fitness Program. We'll come back and talk more about how the Army's trying to train its soldiers for resilience when we come back from our first break. This is On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Jared Serbin. Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is On DOD. I'm Jared Serbu. And after a more than a decade of protracted conflict, each one of the military services has taken an interest in the concept of resilience, training service members with life skills so they can do a better job of dealing with adverse events in their lives, both on and off the battlefield. We're spending the hour this week talking about the Army's program. It's called Comprehensive Soldier and Family Fitness. Back now to our interview with Colonel Kenneth Riddle, that program's director.
I'm guessing that there's, you know, a pretty broad universe of things that could be called resilient skills that the Army could have selected for this program. Can you talk about the process by which you selected which ones would make the cut and how much scientific rigor goes into this process?
Right. So about 4 years ago, when the Army was looking for a curriculum, a training program that would enhance the resilience, train resilience skills of the soldiers, at the time, the University of Pennsylvania had one of the few, if not the only one, evidence-based curriculum that trained the skills. It underwent 25 randomized trial studies, peer-reviewed literature, and was a train-the-trainer program. because what UPenn was doing was training their instructors to train the resilience skills. So it was kind of already the train-the-trainer model. So it was real easy to adopt that evidence-based train-the-trainer model for the military. As I understand it at the time, they searched far and wide, and that was the only evidence-based program that they could find and fit the Army needs at the time. Now, has there been some criticism on that program? Yes, there has been. Some of the critics a few years ago said, well, you didn't test the curriculum on a military population when you adopted it. And they are absolutely right. And at the time, the senior leadership made the decision, I don't have time to wait 3 years and do a longitudinal study on the effects of this training.
Mm-hmm.
It's already an evidence-based curriculum. There's already randomized trials that show it's effective on society. Well, soldiers come from society. So senior leadership at the time made the decision, we're going to adopt this curriculum. And I'm glad they did, because it was the right decision. And we are now testing it on a military population, and it's showing positive results.
To that point about the uniqueness of populations, you're going after soldiers, you're going after DA civilians, and you're going after families. Well, three pretty different groups with different characteristics. How much tailoring have you done to address specific needs in those three different groups?
A lot of tailoring is really not needed between the three curriculums, although we are doing some now. Because these are life skills, core skills. So what we have to do is come up with vignettes and examples when we exemplify the skills that resonate with the audience. So when we started training spouses as Master Resilience Trainers, because we've recently approved spouses attending the 10-day course to become Master Trainers, so they can turn around and share these skills with other spouses. When we started sending them through the 10-day course, we did have to add some vignettes and scenarios that resonated with the spouses. And we're getting ready to do some for DA civilians too, because you can't just use all soldier examples and sure. vignettes. It just doesn't resonate. So, but I would say the core skills themselves, there's no modification needed for the audiences.
I think a key part of this entire program is actually measuring resilience on an individual basis. You want to talk about how you go about doing that through your assessment tool and whatever other means you use?
Yeah, so it is difficult to measure an individual's level of resilience. And so we've got a lot of past studies and ongoing studies to try and determine at the aggregate level, are we making any difference with this training? And the evidence to date has shown we are making a difference with the training. Now, I got to caveat that by saying there are some that believe what we're attempting to do is treat mental health issues or prevent PTSD. And that's not what this program was designed to do. So I don't think it's ever going to achieve that end state of preventing suicides, preventing PTSD, or treating mental illness. It was designed to be a prevention program, equipping with individuals with skills that help them in everyday life, help them cope with, again, adverse and traumatic situations. So the studies we're doing are looking at the effects on training, and we are looking at the gamut of data. We're looking at drug and alcohol rates. We're looking at suicide rates. We're looking at family advocacy issues. We're looking at crime rates. We're looking at mental health issues, rates of PTSD, and there's a correlation. And for instance, one of the most recent studies showed that the units that are doing the training to standard that have an MRT or doing the resilience training, there is a significant reduction in drug and alcohol rates. And that indirectly can impact mental health and PTSD and suicides, because drug and alcohol is a contributing factor to those illnesses. So there's an indirect impact that the program may not have been designed to address, but it's helping. So reduction in drug and alcohol rates. We also found a reduction in anxiety and depression in a recent study. Again, those are contributors to potential mental health issues. And so indirectly, we are addressing the things the program was never designed to address, and it's showing impact. I think for me, the most powerful thing is the testimonies. When I go out in the field and I talk to soldiers and I talk to family members and I talk to units, and to hear the stories about how the resilience and performance training personally affected them, personally helped them, is powerful. Can you capture that in a data report? It's kind of hard, but it's everywhere. And so when people ask me, hey, show me the results, the first thing I'll tell them is go out and talk to a soldier. Go out and talk to a soldier that's been through the training. Go out and talk to a family member that's been through the training, a DA civilian that's been through the training. Get their personal story, how it helped them. And that's what this program is all about, helping soldiers, helping family members, helping DA civilians.
Back to your points on measuring the drops and things like drug and alcohol use, anxiety and depression, can you quantify that for me in any way? I don't know if you have numbers in your head that would bear that out, but is there anything you can say about how much those things have come down?
The one number that comes to mind in the most recent technical report, Technical Report 4, the scientists found they compared four brigades that had resilience training, had MRTs in the formations, and then four brigades, pretty large organizations, that didn't have MRTs, were not going through the resilience training. It's where we were standing up the program. And what they found was the four brigades that went through the training saw a 60% reduction in drug and alcohol incidents. Now, they caveat that. They can't determine if the resilience training was a sole contributing factor to those rate reductions. We know it was a major part. But the scientists do have to caveat from what they can, you know, from the data.
Mm-hmm. That's Army Colonel Kenneth Riddle, the director of the Army's Comprehensive Soldier and Family Fitness Program. We'll come back and talk more about how the Army is trying to get individual soldiers, family members, and civilians to assess their own resilience confidentially and what they're supposed to do with that information once they have it. This is On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbia. Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is On DOD. I'm Jared Serbu. Talking this week about personal resilience in the U.S. military. All the services are interested in that subject after a long, grinding period of war and seeing the effects that it's had on their service members. Each service, in fact, has a senior military leader who it's appointed as a resilience service chief. They meet regularly to compare notes on the best ways to train their members to cope with adversity in their daily lives. Colonel Kenneth Riddle is the director of the Army's program. It's called Comprehensive Soldier and Family Fitness, and it requires each soldier to use an online tool to test his or her own personal resilience.
Back to assessing on an individual basis. Tell me how the assessment tool works and what you're getting out of it so far.
The global assessment tool.
Yes.
So part of our program, so we've talked about the hands-on portion of the training, which
right.
is the performance and resilience training. There's another part of the program that's called online self-development. And within that portion of the program, you've got an assessment instrument that we call the Global Assessment Tool that measures an individual's psychological health and level of resilience. It's been scientifically validated to do a good job of doing that. And then based on that assessment, there's some online self-development because it is a confidential survey. Only the user sees the results. So if a soldier or family member or DCVN needs some help in a particular area based on the assessment, we need to offer them that help, and we do that right now in the form of comprehensive resilience modules, which are videos that address the assessments, the weaknesses in the assessment. So let's say the soldier or family member goes in, takes a global assessment tool, and they find out that they're weak in the emotional domain. We have some videos, online training videos, that help them improve within that, may help them improve within that emotional domain. So the Global Assessment Tool is a pretty good instrument. It's undergoing revision right now to make it more interactive, make it more interesting, make it more appealing, to give better results at the end, results that appeal to different demographics, appeal to soldiers, appeal to family members. So we're adding some more assessment results at the end of it. And then the Comprehensive Resilience Modules, the self-help portion of it, that's getting an overhaul as well. We're absorbing those videos, but making it much more powerful, providing some more online resources, experts, topics to follow, articles to follow, videos to watch, e-coaching online. It's going to be much more resources for the individual than what we're offering now.
And what are kind of the pros and cons of keeping those assessment results confidential? And I guess I'm just thinking, if at least someone else saw those results, it would be easier to push people into training that might help them.
Right. So the assessment was always designed to be a self-assessment, a self-development tool. And in my mind, if the minute we make the results public, or make the results of that assessment known to the command, I believe individuals will stop being totally honest on the assessment. We want it to be a self-assessment, a self-development tool. And in order to do that, you got to keep the confidentiality. Because the minute a soldier believes that his or her command is reviewing the results of their global assessment tool, they may decide not to be honest or to change the answers on this. And then it's no longer a valid instrument. And right now, because it's confidential, and I believe soldiers trust the confidentiality of the instrument, they're being honest on it.
And yet, I think you are allowing commanders to see sort of aggregated results of the assessments. Is that right?
Right now, they can see whether their population, their unit, has completed the assessment.
Okay.
That's it. In the future, when we roll out the new self-development platform, it's called Army Fit. When we roll out Army Fit, commanders, and it's being built right now, but the idea is commanders will be able to see their community, their units, based on global assessment tool results and interaction with Army Fit at the aggregate level. So let me give you an example. A commander pushes a button within Army Fit called the Community Commander's Profile, Senior Commander's Profile, Community Profile button, pushes that. And it tells him or her that 30% of their community has a sleep issue, or 40% of the community has an obesity issue. It gives them an aggregate view, a holistic health assessment of their population. We have not been able to do that in our Army to date. And so it's a powerful capability that we're going to provide commanders that they've been asking for.
Interesting. With regard to the civilian population especially, you know, there are obviously, you know, workplaces in the Army that are predominantly civilian. Can you talk a little bit about how maybe a manager of that kind of organization might use things like the global assessment tool to drive management decisions in the future once he or she sees the results from that aggregate population?
Yeah, so again, the global assessment tool is confidential, so managers won't be able to see individual results.
Right.
But it's potential that the senior individual on that installation can get an aggregate view, a holistic view of the health of their population. And because our civilian organizations hold things like health fairs just like the uniform side does, and they'll be able to target resources towards problems if they can see themselves. Right now, we just shoot in the dark. When we hold a health fair, we have all the organizations and services represented and hoping something sticks. But if we're able to see ourselves holistically and see where our problems may be given a population, we can then target resources towards those problems. So, and civilians also are required to have master resilience trainers. Not only is it one master resilience trainer soldier per company, one spouse master resilience trainer per family readiness group, company size, but there's also a requirement to have one civilian master resilience trainer per every 250 civilians, again, to help train these resilience skills and performance skills to the civilian population.
Back on the cultural issue that we were talking about before, have there been parts of the Army that have been resistant to this kind of thing and see it as a bunch of squishy, wishy-washy nonsense and don't want to adopt it? If so, where's that come from?
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. When Riddle attended the training back in December 2011, I went in as a skeptic because I came through the ranks as an armor officer down in the tactical units, and I heard about this training, and I was going to this 10-day course that I really wasn't familiar with, and when I heard what it was all about, I was skeptical. Well, this is awful different. What's this all about? And on about day three of the 10-day course, for most, the light comes on. And you begin to see the value of these skills, the benefits of these skills for all populations, soldier, family, day, civilians. And it came on for me on day three. I'm like, wow, these are pretty powerful skills. It helps individuals become self-aware. I started using some of the skills with my family during the 10-day course, as many do during the course. So is it hard to buy into, accept by some? Absolutely. And we've got to do a better job of informing and educating leaders throughout the Army on the skills themselves and the benefits of the skills, which is why we're getting ready to roll out an executive course, a 4, 8, and 16-hour executive training course on the resilience and performance skills.
Yeah, what's going to happen in those courses? Talk a little bit more about those, if you would.
So we developed three different versions of the course, 4, 8, and 16-hour, to address different levels. We know division, brigade commanders, and above don't have 16 hours in their schedule to commit to something like this. So we developed a four-hour executive course for the more seniors, an 8-hour version for the intermediate, and then a 16-hour version for our junior leaders that gets more in-depth, because, again, they're the ones that touch soldiers more frequently. And so as we roll this out, the idea is every leader, company commander, first sergeant, and above, will go through one of those versions of the course. And then, and in my opinion, only then, will we start to see this training flourish on the ground. That'll start to take root, that leaders will begin to buy into it, they'll begin to support it. No program in our Army has ever worked without command support. And that's where, that's what we have not done with this program to date, is train leaders. We did a great job of training 18,000 Master Resilience Trainers. We haven't yet informed and educated our leaders like we needed to. So that's the purpose of this executive course. And then once this training starts being done to standard across the Army, then I think we'll start to see the dividends that we know this program can produce.
And how different, to the extent it is the executive course vice the Master Resilience Trainer curriculum that they go through?
Yeah, so it's a very, as you can imagine, a very condensed version of the course.
Gotcha.
It hits the science behind the training. It hits only on a couple of the skills in the 4-hour, about six of the skills in the 8-hour, and about 8 to 10 skills in the 16-hour. So they don't even get all the skills, but they get enough to get an appreciation of what this is all about and the benefits of it.
That is Colonel Kenneth Riddle. He's the director of the Army's Comprehensive Soldier and Family Fitness Program. Back with one more segment on building personal resilience in the armed forces after our final break. This is On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Jared Servin. Thanks for listening to On DoD this week. This is Federal News Radio. I'm Jared Servu. A few more minutes with Colonel Kenneth Riddle as we finish up our conversation on the Army's Comprehensive Soldier and Family Fitness Program. It is the Army's take on a new effort to build individual resilience skills in service members and their families after the stresses of more than a decade of war. Riddle told us earlier this hour that there are still plenty of people in the Army who are skeptical about the program, and he used to be one until he took the training 2 years ago.
I want to go back to your personal experience, and I don't want to be too personally intrusive here, but you talked about having become a convert after you actually went through the course. Can you give us a sense of some of the specifics that you actually got out of it and started using in your own life after you went through this?
Sure. I'll give you it's one of the easiest skills, hunt the good stuff. Again, we talked about that earlier, how it helps an individual think optimistically and improve their well-being and sleep better and all kind of things. And it's a really easy skill to implement. So I started implementing Hunt the Good Stuff with my family, my kids, my 12-year-old Mackenzie and my 16-year-old Hannah. So every night before they go to bed, I go in their room and I say, "What was your Hunt the Good Stuff today?" And they have to think of three things that happened to them that day that were good, whether it be getting a good grade on a test or having a good lunch or, you know, having a good time with friends or maybe school got let out early, whatever it was. They have to tell me three good things that happened that day and why and what it meant to them. And if I do that over time, I'm convinced it's going to help them sleep better. It's going to help them think more optimistically. It's going to help them to be happier in life because that's what the science is behind it. So that's one skill that I grabbed onto and started implementing in my family.
And once you go through this training, do you feel like these are skills that kind of stick with you throughout life? I mean, do you have to try and force yourself to keep thinking about this stuff, or does it become more ingrained? You may not be the best example since you live and breathe this stuff every day, but...
Yeah, I think they need reinforcing on occasion, but it is some of the skills you will start to do inherently when you learn them. Once you start practicing, they'll become a part of your daily routine. Some other skills, you've got to deliberately remind yourself to do them. And in some cases, we need to keep reinforcing these skills every year. That's why this is an annual training requirement, because you got to get refreshed on the skills. And we constantly update the curriculum based on new science. In the future, we're going to be adding new skills based on science. And so it's an evolving process.
Certainly the Army is not the only organization that's interested in resilience. I know your sister services have a deep interest in this topic as well. Talk about how much coordination goes on as you try and share lessons learned with folks in the Air Force, the Marine Corps, the Navy, et cetera.
Absolutely. So on a recurring basis, about twice a year, the resilience chiefs of each of the services get together and share the program, share best practices, and cross-talk about the science. In fact, my next Resilience Services Chief meeting is next week, where the four services will come together and we'll cross-level information on the programs. The Air Force has adopted a program very similar to the Army's. And I believe it's called the Airman Fitness Trainer versus the Master Resilience Trainer, covering many of the same skills that the Army is covering. So a little bit smaller scale, but almost a mirror image of the Army's program. And then the Marine Corps and the Navy have their own model of the resilience program. So there is crosstalk, there is sharing of information, but not once you done fit all. Each of the services have a unique culture, and so they've got to develop a program that works within their service.
As you look through the categories of resilience that you're talking about here, one of them that jumped out at me is spiritual. And that's just because I think there are a lot of people who would look at that and say, why, given the separation of church and state that we have in this country, why is it the U.S. Army's business at all to be talking to me about anything having to do with spirituality or religion? I'm not asking that in order to indicate that it's the wrong thing to do. I'm just wondering, was that a hard line to walk as you developed that particular component?
It's definitely a sensitive issue,
yeah.
And you have to be careful, because we do have to separate church from state. And there's a misunderstanding out there about the term spiritual. Some people relate spiritual directly to religion, and that's not what spiritual's all about. Religion is a component, can be a component of spiritual. But what we mean by spiritual within the context of this program is it's people's beliefs, their values, where they turn to for help in time of need. It's how you were brought up. That's your spiritual nature. Can religion be a part of that? Absolutely. Some people find their strength from religion. Others find their strength from friends or family or in other beliefs. So spiritual is much broader than just religion. And we struggled with that a little bit early in the program, making sure people understood what we meant by the term spiritual. And it's all inclusive. And so we're keeping that name spiritual because it represents what we're trying to achieve in the Army. And religion is a component of it only if you desire it to be.
Mm-hmm. We've only got a few minutes left, so I want to spend a little bit of time talking about next steps and sort of what you're going to be watching to determine whether or not you're being successful or not.
Yeah. So I mentioned the executive training, and I truly believe that's the number one thing we can be doing right now in the program to improve execution on the ground. Because like we talked about, like you asked, are there skeptics out there? And yes, we still have skeptics out there because this is different. But I think the executive training that we're going to do is going to be the game changer. It is going to finally educate and inform the leaders across the Army on the benefits and value of this training. And then we'll start to see it flourishing across the Army. So changes down the road are the executive training. We're also updating the curriculum, the 10-day curriculum, to improve execution on the ground. We're including blocks of instruction now in the future versions of the 10-day course that will, it's called the implementation block of instruction, helping Master Resilience Trainers implement a program in their unit, showing them what some other units are doing, best practices, sharing lessons learned, sharing more about the overall program. So we're doing lots of things in the future to improve execution on the ground.
And to the second part of my question, what are the things that you're going to be watching to know whether you're achieving your desired outcomes?
So we're going to continue our analysis. We have a team of scientists that work out of the Army Analytics Group, and they're constantly looking at things like GAT scores, We're going to start looking at units that are that we know are embracing the training and doing lots of it, because it's now the training is reportable in the unit status report, a monthly report that units have to send information up to headquarters Department of the Army. And so we're going to be looking at those units that are executing it and those units that are not yet where they need to be, and doing some studies on the is there trends, indicators out there of the effects of the training on units that are doing it and units that are not. So we've got to continually assess the training to make sure it's achieving the outcomes that we've set forth.
Colonel Riddle, I've enjoyed talking with you. Thanks very much for
coming
on.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Colonel Kenneth Riddle is the director of the Army's Comprehensive Soldier and Family Fitness Program, talking to us this week about the Army's effort to emphasize resilience skills, among all the other things it instills in its soldiers. We'll post a link to more information about the program along with this entire interview at federalnewsradio.com. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of On DoD. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, every Thursday at 3 p.m., and every Monday at 9 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. here in the Washington area, and everywhere on federalnewsradio.com. I'm Jared Serbu. Thanks for listening. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu, brought to you by BAE Systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.